Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the WWE Night of Champions preview. I'm Michael Hanford from What Culture, and I'm joined by Michael Sidgwick from What Culture to discuss everything that could happen on Saturday's Night of Champions premium live event. But first, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure to subscribe to What Culture on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only preview and review shows such as Night of Champions, but also Monday Night Raw, Friday Night SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We also hold wrestling interviews, have a roundtable discussion, followed by a bloody good quiz on wrestling culture, all that sort of stuff. But we are here, Sidgwick. My intro fell apart there because the heat is starting to get to me slightly in this hotel room, because we are still here in Las Vegas for Double or Nothing weekend. But as we know, it is not just an AEW weekend. There's the small matter of SmackDown Night of Champions, the biggest show of the weekend, NXT Battleground, to be covered in depth next week. But here we are with the latest WWE Saudi show off the top. I think it's always worth doing, as we try to with the coverage, finding the balance between not just ignoring the ethical ramifications and the consequences of all of this. Look, it's sports washing, it's dodgy, it's dicey.
It's ugly.
It's ugly, it's not on. We, at this point, I think not just we, I think as a collective media, don't know how to cover this without talking about both. Like, so just doing it off the top feels like the only way to cover it. We're not just sitting down, previewing a pay-per-view card, and being like, tune in to the wrestling show because it kicks ass, because the card looks pretty good.
Yeah.
But that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah, they've taken a very insidious route.
Nice.
With these goddamn Saudi shows where they're very cynical and clever. Not creative, can't tell stories, not a good promotion, but again, they started wacky and certain people were limited and weren't allowed to appear on the show. Insidiously, over time, you just get big, huge matches that aren't glorified, like Triple H and John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
You get canonical, big matches, title changes, they're launching world titles here.
Yep. There's no other show this month. This is not a bonus show. This is this month.
This is the month's thing. So it's how they get you. It's how they've done it. And I've said it before. I'll say it one more time right now. The big controversy stemming from Crown Jewel 2022 was Braun Strowman having a pop at Flippy Guy wrestlers, and people were like, "How dare you say that?" So I think priorities have been missed here.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's always worthwhile reiterating that these shows are ugly. They are bittersweet, and my God, do they try and cloak that feeling and suppress it with these phenomenal production values.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realise, why do they look so good and expensive? Because they're getting the money for this really sinister reason. So it's an experience. For me personally, they're always bittersweet. And again, though, you just can't muster up the genuinely justified outrage when there's just so much awful other stuff happening all of the goddamn time.
I want to say Brandon Thurston, and if it wasn't him in the version I saw, he's definitely reported this. You just let the figures sit with you. 21.9 million for WrestleMania 39 weekend, an all-time gate, but then it's like not unusual for WrestleMania to pull that kind of crazy number. 100 million for one of these shows.
Yeah.
Like that's.
Or 50, isn't it?
Is it 50?
Either way,
the figures sit with you
doubles the all time WrestleMania gates.
Yeah. And to that end, I suppose, so just like kind of compartmentalising that and like looking at the card.
Switching gears
here in the Wooshed Wii. It's a triple main event, which is a lie because it's a double one, really. But we're playing the WWE's hands with it. It's a triple main event. We're going to come to what I believe will headline the show at the end of this podcast. So we'll start with Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar. It's been my opinion, and I don't know if this is shared by the masses, to be honest. I'm struggling to judge consensus on this programme at large. But people forgave the running away of Backlash because they enjoyed the match, and fine, hot crowd, hot match. But I have to say, on television, in spite of this being quite rote Brock Lesnar material and just Cody being Cody, I think the performances have been pretty strong. This Triple H Cody business went down quite well on Raw. Like, they're just doing Brock Lesnar segments, but they're super hot in the building. You believe Cody?
Yeah.
Brock looks like he's got menace again. This Backlash to Night of Champions run has been way better than I expected when Backlash went off the air, personally.
Yeah. It's just the same cliché Brock Lesnar stuff for me. I'm quite over it. It's weird. I can't put my finger on what I'm not feeling, because Lesnar looks motivated.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to work a program with just anyone. You can tell he respects Cody. Cody's like taking a pounding. He's committing to these sell jobs. And it's just a Lesnar program. And it's with the same tropes, the same story beats.
They are working the Hell in a Cell match, and there's nothing wrong with that because that was supremely successful. But can a worked broken arm be as effective as the bruising on that titty? Like, wrestling injuries are funny. Like, when you see wrestlers gutting through things, that's quite amazing. But then if you stop and think about it, you see wrestlers gutting through every match because that's what happens. You work a body part. Yeah. That bruised titty was something like, if you push a bruise on your leg, it hurts. So when half your body is bruised, that was different gravy for a wrestling injury, wasn't
it? That was different gravy. For me, it feels like WWE in the business of, they're in the business of procrastination. And I think AEW is very guilty of that as well. I'm not being biased here. I'm trying to be accurate and fair. Like Keith Lee versus Swerve Strickland. What is that if nothing other than an exercise in procrastination? Like, why hasn't it happened yet? It's so bizarre. And it just feels like between the banana skin of the flailing suplex bump, but I'm just going to take that turnbuckle pad by accident.
Yeah.
And Lesnar's going to bleed and I'm going to roll him up. With, yes, a legitimate wrestling technique, but then the running away did bother me a bit. And then you get the work broken arm, which will realistically mean Lesnar wins, and that's their get out. They are, in my opinion anyway, concocting through a checklist of, like, imagine a bit of A4 paper, some square little boxes, some descriptions, and the title of the document is, how do we prolong this story? Sort of inconclusive. Lesnar was, he stole one.
Mm-hmm.
Stole one. Kayfabe injury to excuse the baby face to lose. And it's all how to arrive at a rubber match. And this just screams, not the last chapter. And it feels transparent and cynical to me that they're padding out the story, that they're padding it out with tropes to protect. And it doesn't feel like epic, big time, definitive, all or nothing drama. Having said that, in isolation, if you're going to do that, Lesnar will look like he's going to rip it off. Cody will sell it magnificently. Mm-hmm. It'll be a good version of the rote, transparent procrastination that is, in effect, the WWE content model these days. It's as a trilogy.
Are you sure of that? You got Brock to win this, have you?
I've got Brock to win this. Brock's not doing a job to someone who's got a broken arm and storylines.
You're going to panic a lot of people about how on earth Cody can be free to A, win Money in the Bank, and then B, cash in on Roman at SummerSlam.
Yeah, he can win the Rumble next year.
If we need another Brock match at one of those big shows, which that's a big match for one of those big shows, I suppose, isn't it? The payoff.
He'll just win the Rumble.
Yeah. I don't think he's winning the SummerSlam. I'm representing Adam Wilborn here about, like, because there's a listenership that agrees. So, like, it, don't you? I don't think so. But like,
I'll be staggered. I'm genuinely astonished if Brock Lesnar does a job with his opponent having a broken arm. Yeah. If you somehow convinced him to lose two on the trot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that finish looks like, but it doesn't look very good. You're not saying, all right, we're really trying to build Cody, Brock. It's not about you anymore, and to really put him over, he's going to beat you with a broken arm. I just cannot imagine Brock Lesnar, one of the most savvy political operators in wrestling history, agreeing to that, particularly when he's just turned heel. He might do the job, and again, for the rubber match, I'm worried about what that looks like, because they just can never commit to beating the dude.
Yeah.
Narrative cowardice, procrastination, tropes. It just doesn't feel necessarily, despite some really good performances on both sides of the ring, that they are just telling this story of Cody's the absolute one.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the proof. It doesn't feel like that to me. It just feels like content.
Well, speaking of content.
Good content, but content nonetheless.
Speaking of content and narrative cowardice, the most cowardly decision WWE made in like 20, 30 years was not putting the belt on Cody at WrestleMania. And had they done that, there would have been an awesome storyline reason for Cody wanting to show respect to the Universal title and giving it up to the winners of the tournament. That doesn't happen, so instead we've got that weird new toy belt, and that's going to be the second part of the triple main event, Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles. I don't hate what this match could be, but I have slightly tempered my expectations because this is, feels like one of them that was always more of a photoshopped WrestleMania graphic than an actual dream match, and the result just doesn't feel in doubt to me.
It doesn't, but do you not think that Seth Rollins needs to face more adversity?
Like,
isn't that the rule?
Maybe at the moment the adversity he's facing is out there in Hollywood. I'm AJ goddamn Styles, and I want to stay WWE champion for the WWE.
Not because I won't get cased. look, it's one of those where it's AJ, whose run has been so uneven for me.
Mm.
You can never guarantee. I'm not saying AJ isn't a great. He is. I think he peaked before going into WWE. If you're a great, you should have that unconditional sense that, oh, it's going to be a great match.
AJ, for me,
he's a great.
He's, like, there's exceptions. There's always exceptions. His floor is 3, which is incredible. But his ceiling is typically only 4.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, like, that's a weird thing to get excited about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, he's got, they're in there. They're in, those matches are in there still.
Oh, they are. Like, his match against Daniel Bryan at TLC 2019 was unbelievable. And on that, one of the other really great AJ matches that he's had in WWE, and he's had so many threes, it's really I always look at AJ Styles, and this is weird as a 3-star wrestler in WWE and not in New Japan, not in TNA, but I always think it averages out at 3. He's had far too many just, that was good.
Hmm.
At the Edge,
he can't be rubbish, can he? Like, he can be boring.
He can be boring,
though.
Edge, Orton, like Ricochet, Nakamura, 3, mm-hmm. 3, 3, 3. Des Preston front work like a 4.5 with Seth Rollins, and that happened at Money in the Bank 2019, I think.
Kicked
it was.
That match.
Kicked ass.
So good.
It was so good.
Had a lot to live up to, didn't it?
Yeah. They were really sort of, they went out there motivated as all hell, and that match was great. If they can replicate that magic, fantastic, we're in for a treat here. What I loved about that match, and what I loved about the great AJ matches in WWE, is that he puts a lot of thought into them. One of my favourite bits that he does is, like, if you give him a centimetre of space, he can find a way to punish you. One of his great moves is that suplex into the turnbuckle, where you think you're making him retreat into the turnbuckle, you've got him cornered, but he's so good he can find that centimetre of space and punish you. Mm. It just makes him like a master strategist. So if they can work that AJ Styles match where it just feels like he's genuinely wrestling and fighting and being a master of this form, and he thinks about how to get moves out of nowhere because it's as if he's studied and he knows every part of that ring. That AJ's great, but equally you get a 3-star special here. It's Seth Rollins' title. It's an appeasement trophy. I'm not saying that it will always be that way, but that's what it feels like. But the thing with Saudi Arabia and these shows and the production values is that they could, through the ridiculous expense of these shows, with some kind of championship ceremony or display, like the celebration with the pyro everywhere, where they could physically frame where that belt looks like on some kind of bespoke pillar.
The fans will come up around the finishes, the false finishes, a world title has been decided, the fans will come up.
I honestly think they could do, it would be inexcusable if they don't make a massive production out of this, because they've got such a glorious chance through the platform of $50 million to create this. They could fake how prestigious this looks, even if it doesn't feel that way, and then one thing could inform the other. But no, Seth Rollins to win. AJ was basically burying the existence of this title.
Yeah.
I can't remember the press outlet, I apologise.
I think a heel turn's coming for a rematch.
Yeah.
Like, I think he turns out of frustration of not winning it, because the whole, it's alright, I don't want the belt, is like an intentional neg for the build of what's coming next. In terms of titles that actually mean something, Gunther's Intercontinental title match against Mustafa Ali. There are suggestions online that, like, something's happening with Mr. Farley. That the positive. The positive,
how many times have I been here with this?
Yeah.
It's not a rhetorical question.
These.
Dozens.
Yeah, loads. These are not my takes, but.
They're Will Bonds.
No, they're not even Will Bonds. But the Twitters, for the first time in a long time, Brock Lesnar and Ali were in each other's orbit, and you know what happens when that happens. People do side by sides, people remember. Member berries, all that kind of crap. But it was pretty brutal. Like, get a life, mate. Like, that's you're just cutting down your intercut. We talked about this on the SmackDown preview, which you can get to wherever you listen to your podcasts, about Triple H's need to bury and then rebuild. But Ali's had this burial 60 times and just forget to rebuild him. He's going to lose to Gunther at this, like, Saudi Arabian PLE in a match that, like, calling it a sleeper hit is an insult to the wrestlers.
Yeah.
It should bang in places. The result is not in doubt in the slightest. But the positive Ali character looked like it was being abandoned in real time when Brock did that. It's like, how can I be positive when everybody thinks I stink?
Yeah.
Like, is this defeat going to be the rock bottom adversity that Ali needs? And is he going to get revenge on Brock Lesnar down the road?
No.
It's just a match, this. You think this is, like, all of it on an island?
It's just so odd.
Yeah.
So odd.
Riddle's the match, isn't it?
Foreshadowed that one. This one with Ali is so odd. Like, the best version of this match looks great.
Mm.
Ali, great baby face, great stylistic mesh with Gunther. But they're telling a story of some deluded idiot who's in over his head and he's a deluded man, the character, who thinks that if he just thinks positive, Ali, he can be a good, but he's just a goober, he's obnoxious.
Yeah.
He's like, he's not an undersized baby face you have to get behind, otherwise he'll get monstered. Stop, the booking is so odd.
Yeah.
I do not like it. I think they've not good booking because they've just ruined a pretty basic but potentially effective B-level defense.
Mm.
This nonsense character.
Yeah. Gunther to retain?
Yes. I don't think the match will be that good either.
Ah, that's interesting.
Well,
that's...
if he decides to be a dick, there's one story that could tell here. Ali could be an arsehole.
Mm-hmm.
This obnoxious, in over his head, deluded guy, and then get killed. And then gradually, mid-match, evolve and just start really putting the effort in, and then have this really cool sort of doomed baby face, gives everything.
Mm-hmm.
The scope for an interesting story here is just whether they tell it and whether fans, after so many false starts, can actually get behind the character.
Yeah, and there is, especially in Saudi Arabia, I think the shadow of Brock Lesnar and Ricochet leans over this one a little bit.
Yeah.
That kind of like, why not me? Here's why 10 seconds later.
Yeah, it's not you.
Yeah. I don't know where to go with this one. There's certainly no segue to it. It's a rematch from WrestleMania. Bianca Belair versus Asuka for the Raw Women's title, featuring women that wrestle on SmackDown. Asuka's turned heel. She put Chili in the mist. Like, so the dynamic is different now because you've got a straight-up babyface and straight-up heel. But kind of like, they pulled that kick-ass match out of the, like, ashes of a pretty terrible TV program at WrestleMania, and it almost didn't need the heel and babyface. So you should, in theory, have a lot of faith in this one.
Yeah.
This is, like, this has got a better story. Asuka's lost. She's pissed off. So it's time to just be cruel and nasty. I'm joking about, like, I'm being flippant about the miss, but the reality of that is, like, right, time to get mean.
Yeah.
And I haven't done that before, and I didn't, like, I should have been meaner before WrestleMania and not ruined my WrestleMania match. I won't blow it here. She will, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know why I'm finding this better dynamic to potentially be a diminished return.
It's
a stadium, though, so...
It's Bianca Belair, yeah. I've got... It's, again, you look at the attire, and the thing is, with the spectacle,
yeah,
you can't... Like, you look at fireworks, and you just think, Jesus Christ. If I wasn't, like, incinerating yesterday. We went to the Palagio Fountains. We had a big walk on the Strip.
Yeah.
We're here in Las Vegas.
Fountains, they ruled, didn't they?
Yeah, and we were watching the Palagio Fountain display, and it was incredible. And...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I just vividly recall going, it's too hot. It feels like I'm being stung by the sun, not bathing it, like stung. And even with that burn on my face, I was like, well, look at that.
Mm.
There's pyro underwater, it sounds like. How is this? Vegas! This is great, and I'm burning. So spectacle can make you forget a lot of things, is what my point is here. So when you see the ridiculous drones and lavish set, insane pyro, you'll just be reduced to a child and you'll forget. Mm. You don't want to forget, but you'll forget about the horrible trappings of these shows. When I watch a women's match in Saudi Arabia and I see the attire, the custom attire that they are told to wear, I find it's so distracting to me.
Yeah.
They could work
a
better or even better match than they had at WrestleMania, which is really frantic, furiously worked, loads of really cool
over delivery,
like loads of cool submission transitions from like power setup spots. But the difference is that this could be tighter because it wasn't the tightest, but it didn't matter because the emotion was there, the reaction was there, the atmosphere was there. A better, tighter version of that WrestleMania match is the difference for me is that incredibly brave and unbelievably talented contortionist doing the entrance. It's one of the nicest things WWE has ever done, that Bianca Belair entrance. To go from that to you have to wear a full bodysuit, that's the difference for me.
That's fair. That's that is all fair. This is one of three women's matches on a Saudi Arabia show, Tony.
Yeah, I know.
God damn it, man.
So bad.
And we'll go quick on this next one because I think it should be quick. I would love Rhea Ripley to monster Natalya in 10 seconds here. And it's not to be cruel to Natalya particularly, but narratively that's pretty good, isn't it? Like Rhea Ripley, like Natalya is not in Ripley's league at this point. And this is not about work rate or anything like that. This is just simply, look at where these characters live on television. Rhea Ripley isn't just the leader of the Flipping Judgment Day because we can't do the beat, so I can't do the bit.
Yes.
But she's becoming one of WWE's top stars.
Yeah, she's already there.
If she's not already there, this trajectory is like top guy stuff. And Natalya is like the jobber challenger of all challengers. I hate for this to scan as cruel, but like, just look at where these are in the pecking order and book to it. That's fun. Like, Riptide.
It's not fun.
But like Riptide dead, like I can't believe you even stepped to me.
Yeah.
Like I thought they nailed. You know, like Zelina Vega, like really good hometown booking, but Rhea Ripley comprehensively beat her because it made sense.
Yeah.
Like you got 7 minutes and it was nice, but it was never like she's gonna get it done. And I like that about like you. You've got to like your agent in has got to protect the integrity of the story you're trying to tell with Rhea Ripley. And dominance is then undermined by 8 competitive back and forth minutes with somebody who she's this point surpassed. You know.
I don't think it's gonna be good. That's the thing. I mean, there's no way of this being good. Natalya is solid.
Yeah.
I can't get excited by solid, especially when I've seen solid for well over a decade at this point, I think. So the thing with this dynamic is that it just doesn't work. It's boring. It's predictable. You have got Gatekeeper versus someone who passed that gate like ages ago.
Yeah.
So she doesn't need a Gatekeeper for any kind of weird, fake, worked credibility. So the match makes no sense for these characters to have, and then you go into the actual wrestling element of it, and who's great, it's that Natalya is a gatekeeper of, if you beat me it means something. You probably won't. Well, you probably will, but it'll mean something. She's not even there anymore.
Yeah.
Got no credibility, being there forever, and I always feel guilty to a degree, right, of burying the likes or criticising. I'm not burying their character, I'm not being cruel about it. critiquing someone like a Natalya or a Dolph Ziggler, it's not necessarily their fault if they keep getting these contract extension offers and are liked internally and entrusted to do a job. But wrestling fandom is inherently cruel in that it never ends. 52 weeks a year, so at a minimum 104 shows per promotion. Multiply that by what? Between the two of them, like 30 odd years.
Yeah.
Who cares? And the worst thing is like, if you do all of that math and then you do some weird equation and formula with how many bumps they must have taken, the more you bump, the more I'm bored by it. The more that you sacrifice your body for my entertainment, the more I'm just bored, senseless.
Yeah.
So I always feel a bit of guilt when like these WWE post Ruthless Aggression era lifer generation get put in these matches because it's like, I'm such a dick. And you can tell by the guy, I'm hurt every day trying to do this for you. And it's like, well, you know, I wouldn't turn down that money either.
Well, I think that's it. Like, Dolph Ziggler and Natalya are perfect examples of, like, the purpose they serve is often not one we see, which is, like, reps for people on house shows that are on the come up, right? But then WWE rationalise, well, if you're going to believe that house show match, which exists as a rep for somebody else, once every 2.5 years, we've got to put them in one brief title programme.
Yeah.
Dolph Ziggler versus Drew McIntyre, Natalya versus Rhea. I actually don't hate the logic, but as a fan, it's impossible to invest.
Yes, it's
like that system makes 100% sense to them. But that's
AEW neither of us Lance Archer, like that sort of
thing. That's a pro wrestling thing, but it's very hard for us to be able to suspend any disbelief.
And this is why, like with Archer, it did get a bit boring, but it gets me every time because they haven't done it that often, and he's not wrestling and bumping the same matches every week. You know, there's a way to do it, and I do think rotating cast. I can get bored of that in AEW as well, trust me, but I do think it's very effective in terms of this sort of dynamic and this sort of, you have to procrastinate a bit in wrestling. I'm under no illusions. This is, WWE finds the most boring way though, every single time.
Sticking sort of with Rhea Ripley, because presumably the outcome of this match might factor into her summer. Becky Lynch versus Trish Stratus.
Oh boy.
This, yeah, I'm really interested in your thoughts on this because I already know some of them and I like, this is massive on paper. Way bigger than it's been in execution. But it's... WWE love their own mythology as a ways of, like, promoting big matches,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sit there on CAC all day long.
All day. And it's always, like, very sort of situational or subjective whether or not you want to do that too. But Trish Stratus, the woman credited with being the only one to kind of consistently break through on a credible level in the darkest timeline for the... And I think some of that's overstated because she did come out of that Molly Holly, Jazz, Victoria, quiet golden era. She was learning from the best and like almost was like elevated by the WWE machine to the next level. Like along with Lita, I suppose, in the same kind of vein. And then Becky Lynch, who did that version of that with the Women's Revolution era to main event WrestleMania and become a bona fide top star. Absolutely bigger than Roman Reigns or Seth Rollins or Kofi Kingston in 2019.
Yeah.
Like the undisputed number one top star and draw. This is what they say it is. That versus that. That's the poster, that's the fight, that's
Why
the whole
does it
deal.
Feel like it?
It's bang average stuff, isn't it?
It is.
And one of them is surely Rhea Ripley's summer opponent.
Yeah.
You know, because Trish might be sticking around and whatnot.
My least favourite take in all of wrestling, and I have quite a few of them, is when people say, no one hates wrestling more than wrestling fans. First of all, no one else gives a toss about wrestling other than wrestling fans, one way or the other. So it makes no sense as a sentence you can construct. Secondly, and this is a great example of it, like, yes, you'll get posters online who, like, bury your faves, even though your faves are great, because that's just how they like to live, and it's pathetic in my opinion, but it's what they do.
Yeah. Does that count when I'm critical of The Undertaker?
No.
Oh, thank God.
Because The Undertaker sucked.
Oh, thank God. That's all right.
People have been so generous to all of this because they have really nice memories of Trish Stratus and they like her a lot and they are willing to forgive her flaws. If you have no particular nostalgia for WWE and you watch this version of Trish Stratus, again, there's no credibility to this. It all hinges on the idea that this revolutionary, uber-respected veteran kind of pissed off that other people are supplanting her in these sort of
They don't need Trish Stratus's women's title run anymore.
Once upon
a time, that was all they had.
Exactly.
Her and, like, Michelle McCool.
Yeah.
None of that's needed now.
And the character, Trish Stratus, has taken offence to this and is going to reclaim a throne. Mm. Coming out of retirement, like the Washington Wizards, Michael Jordan thing. Mm. Get it as a narrative device. It's quite sporting. It has no credibility to me because Trish Stratus's in-ring output just is not there.
Yeah.
It's like... It's not... So she was doing the... She's working as good as... This would work if she was able to do a 2002 Sean run or something like that. Maybe that's a little bit harsh because he was a bit younger. So I'm trying to think of a good example of someone just really coming back into the main event out of nowhere. Maybe CM Punk.
Punker, like, not quite on the same prestige as main events, but, like, Sting's figured out what his work is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In various different...
Yeah.
Like, I'm not just talking AEW, I'm thinking, like, TNA as well. He figured himself out as an aging, like, veteran.
I'm not being... Again, like, she was... That Lita main event, I always feel like I should say something nice. Maybe it's because I've been hanging around Miller too long. In Las Vegas, that's a joke.
That's impossible. You can't hang around with Miller too long. He's the best.
He's such a good
guy. You want to be a better man when you hang around with Simon Miller, don't you?
This is true. All that being said, as much as I would like to be more like Simon Miller, this Trish Stratus work, it's not even as good as Ricky Steamboat at WrestleMania 25. It just isn't, like, it's not some master.
If she does suffer Japanese arm drag tomorrow, we know that she's
listening. Yeah, I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm just calling it like I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate people who be that kind of guy.
Yeah.
But
Michael Sidgwick, love him or leave him.
Michael Sidgwick, telling it like it is. I hate that kind of, like...
Coming to podcasts.
Wherever
you get him.
I hate that kind of ass call, like, I see it. I can't be bought on this shit. I can't be bought.
Let's just shoot on society. I hate people. Like, I'm not capable of much hatred, but I really hate the trait of people saying, well, I just, like, say it how I say it.
It's called spear.
Yeah, like a lump. It's like, that's not actually being a good person.
Yeah, no.
Compromise is a good value system. Like, thinking, changing, developing. Like, those are good traits.
Yes.
Like, well, that's just how I am. Like it or lump it. I'll do neither.
Yeah.
Change. Be better.
Yeah. Like, and I have empathy, but ultimately this just isn't working for me at all. And they are, again, I would say this is probably a noble failure.
Becky Lynch to win for the Rhea Ripley Summer Series. It's a big match, that, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. Yes. Or they could just do some kind of heel finish. It is the Fed after all. Uh-huh. Do another one.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew you would.
Yeah, I knew you win. Are we good? We're good. Right. I'll say this to last because I genuinely believe it's the headliner. And am I sat here in Las Vegas ahead of Double or Nothing and saying this is the best book match of the weekend? I might be. I think this match is absolutely brilliant. I think this is brilliant.
It's good.
Like, maybe not Anarchy in the Arena. Actually, maybe Anarchy in the Arena's got it licked and Team Jarrett and versus FTR.
Jericho Cole. But that's...
Yeah. All right. It's really great for doing. This is a biggie. Like, it's Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn defending the tag titles against the Bloodline. You know it all now, but the sort of the elevator pitch is that after this, Zayn and Owens have finished with the Bloodline forever. So it's, do they take their tag belts forward with Roman eating a pretty sizable L because he's alongside Solo Sikoa, or does Roman Reigns get his, like, hands on yet another title as WWE figure out a new way to present the tyrannical head of the table post Cody Rhodes? It's really high stakes, and yet again, WWE have, to their credit in my opinion, like, elevated. Triple H is, like, doing a half decent job with this tag division. This is going to be the second tag team title main event of a PLE this year that actually deserves the spot. Good stuff.
It's good stuff, this. Right. It's really, really strong stuff. And again, as we touched on the SmackDown preview, and don't necessarily buy Roman's fear of Solo Sikoa, but god damn it, it's great that they're booking this.
Yeah.
Looking ahead, trying so hard.
It's getting a finish, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's committed stuff.
Well, it's getting a finish in one way that I think builds to the future, and they should be building to the future. God knows, since I've been covering wrestling, I've been, like, hammering this home. I think the match will be strong. I think there'll be quite a lot of heat for it. I think it's so unpredictable because Sami and Kevin, they weren't launched as, like, a tag team.
Mm.
It was... They were put together to tell a different story outside of this division. So maybe this division doesn't necessarily need them.
Uh-huh.
So there's always, I could always buy the prospect of, well, you've done the good bit.
Yeah.
You know, you could just go your separate ways or something. So I'll always buy a title switch. So I think that's a benefit of the booking here. And again, the ramifications of Roman and Solo winning is great. because then Roman can be even more of a cock to the Usos, and eventually, and this is how I want it to go at long last, Jey Uso develops a backbone, realizes what's happening to him, breaks out as a babyface and beats Roman, because the way he just passively looks at the floor, like scared of his dad, it's not the kind of thing I like in a wrestler.
The I'm going to dedicate this to the best team of all time. The Wild Samoans was really
that
great
was
part
so
from Roman, wasn't
great.
It? So good.
So great.
Yeah.
So
because they dedicated their match to Roman and they lost.
Yeah.
So it's like, you want to do dedications, you losers.
And I've had to listen or read things to the effect of Jey Uso is going to be the one. It's like, I just don't think, if you think about this machine and how they market and how they think of like merchant design ideas like months in advance and all the promotional materials are built around who's going to be the big star on the house shows. I don't think that machine's ever really been put behind Jey Uso. I don't think in 2020 there was a memo sent to all the merch departments, all the people who sort out the faces on the trucks, like the marketing teams. Jey Uso's going to be the guy. It's going to take 2 or 3 years, but just put in motion all of this that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Can't see it, but this is a good vehicle to get there, even if I'm being too cynical.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see Roman and Solo winning just you're not even the best tag team in the bloodline.
Yeah.
You think you're the best tag team in WWE history, you are not even the best tag team in the bloodline. That'd be a great emotional trigger for Jey Uso to go, oh, fuck this.
Yeah.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Let's have a fight then.
Uh-huh.
And that'd be a really, really good match. And that was what was kind of promised to us all at WrestleMania before Triple H was an arsehole. And
Serge, have you got a finish for this?
I do have a finish for this, because that would be one way you could take the story. And as he said, the magic really of this booking is that there's so many different directions in which this can go. So, I think, stemming from the events of last week's SmackDown, where Roman inadvertently got in Solo's way and realised, oh, I should not have done that, because I'm showing a little bit of fear. This is the man who, I might have made a monster here.
Yeah.
I might have Triple H Batista'd this. So that's another really strong component of the storyline, which, frankly, is doing a lot better than a lot of bad faith people on Twitter suggest. Like, they've taken this in a more interesting direction. I think the finish here is that a paranoid Roman, afraid of the monster that he has potentially built and bumped into and was a little bit frightened of, is going to do something deliberate, accidentally on purpose, to make Solo mess up.
Ah.
So he can use that as pretext to say, "Is there, can anyone in this family than me do anything?" And try and reduce them further before they eventually get agency.
Mm.
With the idea being that, oh my God, I don't want to work this guy.
Yeah.
And if I can just reduce him to nothing before this monster really becomes something, which I don't want, how can I do this? But at the same time, I kind of want the Usos to be on that level as well. Like, he's going to lash out and do something here. I think that's the finish.
What, so Roman and Solo win?
Lose?
Roman and Solo lose, and Roman has kind of wanted to bring Solo down a peg or two, and he's willing to sacrifice the tag titles to do that?
Yep.
Ah.
Doesn't do much for the tag titles, to be fair.
Yeah.
But that's WWE.
But then that's down to Owens and Zayn to make this look like a hard-fought win
and
move forward and move on.
Yeah.
Like, they've done their sort of bloodline business, that kind of thing. Well, like, you know, I don't think...
Or Roman could simply win. Because he's Roman Reigns.
Because he's Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Well, it was really funny when he eyeballed the New World title on SmackDown, wasn't it? That was incredible part of just stopping and having a quick look.
Yeah,
like, what's that? I mean, I might get it. If I fancy it.
Yeah.
Really good. Really good. Well, yeah, that's one of the numerous finishes possible for this main event. If you've got any sort of fantasy booking suggestions, or you've got any sort of other opinions on this show, Night of Champions, the Bloodline, etc., etc., you can let us know in the replies to the tweet below on this podcast, if I remember to send it, or indeed just tweet us anyway at WhatCultureWWE, where you can also get Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
You can find me at Michael Hamflett. You can follow along on Twitter, on YouTube, and on WhatCulture.com for all of our Vegas weekend content, our WWE Night of Champions, our NXT Battleground. It's a huge weekend for pro wrestling. It's a great time to be a wrestling fan. It's an even better time to be a WhatCulture one, because we've got content coming out the ass. So yes, thank you for listening to that kind of nonsense. As always, we couldn't do any of this without you. And until next time, we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.